Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 136. Hello, everyone. Lovely
Hello.
To see you. Lovely to hear you. I was talking to the listeners, Al, not you.
Oh.
Hello to you as well. Lovely to see you both. Hello to everyone, wherever you may be. I am Mel. I am joined this week by the one and only, very eager to get stuck in, Eleanor Goodman, Deputy Editor at Metal Hammer. How you doing, Al?
I am okay, thanks. I was very excited and now I'm sad you weren't talking to me.
I am talking to you now. We'll have plenty of talking time
okay.
as the evening progresses. I'm also joined by the one and only Jonathan Seltzer, Reviews Editor of Metal Hammer. How you doing, Seltz?
I'm all right. Yeah, for one and only, it's probably a good thing.
good stuff. I'm very excited about this because I have the subscriber edition on my desk right now and it looks absolutely badass, if I do say so myself. We have a brand new issue of Metal Hammer out in the shops right now. We are celebrating 50 years. Can you actually believe this? 50 years of Judas Priest, the most metal band of all time. Facts. I'm not having any arguments on the matter. We talk to the band about their career, the many highs and lows that they have experienced, and a quite frankly phenomenal and roller coaster 5 decades in music together. We talk to all 5 current members, and we also have some cool and exclusive stuff about what the future holds for them, and it might just include some brand new Judas Priest music, which we're very excited about. It's an awesome cover job. It looks badass, as I said, so you should go pick it up right now, whether you're a Judas Priest fan or just a fan of anything heavy and metal. And there's loads more stuff in the new issue as well. We have a look inside the new Mastodon release, where they take us inside the rare and B-side tracks that make up their new album. We talk to the one and only Greg Picciotto about his brand new and first ever solo album, which has just got a maddening amount of different stuff on it and is very interesting stuff indeed. We talk to the one and only Perry Farrell, another enigmatic and brilliant rock star, about his amazing life and career in and out of Jane's Addiction.
One of my heroes.
Go on, Sal.
Yeah, no, just when I was like in my teens, Jane's Addiction, I was obsessed with them, and I was obsessed with Perry Farrell. Yeah, it always just came across like such an interesting, unique individual, and just that band. Like, if I could take 5 records to a desert island, Rituals of the Habituals would be one of them. Just that record makes me feel so happy, and I think I mentioned this in the piece I did with him, that the best description someone said of Jane's was that they rock out in 360 degrees.
Yeah,
and it was just this kind of like, it's just this kind of like absolute if you felt like any kind of outsider, he kind of celebrated that. He could, you know, celebrate his kind of his difference and his freakishness, and I just absolutely love that band. So to speak to Perry Farrell was a real honor, and yeah, the guy's awesome. Can't really answer a question or tell anecdotes. He just goes off on tangents, but the tangents are always, the scenic route's always the best route.
Yeah, it is a fantastic feature as well, if I do say so myself. So that is also in the latest issue. Also in the brand new issue that is out right freaking now, L chats to Ghostmane, who is, I mean, he didn't like us using the term trap metal, but I think it's the best way of kind of making people understand what he's all about. He's kind of like the first kind of superstar that trap metal has produced, hasn't he? And he sounds like a really interesting character.
Yeah, I think he would... We talked about this in the piece. You could kind of go with trap metal if it's used to describe a loose configuration of people doing similar things. But his point is he spent years and years and years working on his craft, basically blending old school hip hop with metal, 90s metal legends like Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson to produce trap metal. So you've got beats, you've got sort of metal riffs and lyrics and the metal aesthetic. So he dresses very much like Manson used to dress in the 90s. It's got a cool stage show. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's an awesome feature as well. Really enjoyed reading that. Trap metal, whether, you know, the thing about labeling genres is as soon as you come up with a catch-all tag, like every artist involved in it instantly wants to distance themselves from it. Like, it happens all the time, doesn't it? Carpenter Brute doesn't want to be called synthwave. 90% of the actual good bands to come out of the new metal scene didn't actually want to be called new metal. And so you can kind of understand why he maybe doesn't want to be caught up in that, because he does slightly precede it, but he's a fascinating artist, and I think Al's feature is absolutely swell. That's in the new issue as well. And we've got loads of stuff in there. We've got Sepultura in there. We've got a great feature on Amaranth and the amazing journey that their singer Elise went through to get to where she is today. We've got stuff with Evil in there. We've got stuff with Shavo from System of a Down in there. He's got quite a big feature giving us his life lessons in there. We put your questions to Devil Driver and Cold Chamber legend Des Fafara. It's all in the new issue. The cover is Judas Priest. It's the most metal thing you will put in your eyeballs this month. So go and pick it up right now. It's in shops across the UK, or you can get it from tinyurl.com/gethammer. That's tinyurl.com/gethammer. I should say as well that for Corey Taylor fans out there, we still have a few of his bundles left as well, featuring an exclusive Corey Taylor cover and a specially commissioned art print, hand-numbered and signed by the excellent artist Adam Forster, who has done a ton of cool stuff over the years. So yeah, if you're a Corey fan and you haven't picked up one of those bundles yet, go to tinyurl.com/Corey bundle to get your hands on one, because it is very, very, very good indeed. Al, you were just saying that you checked out the Linkin Park stream on over the weekend. What was that all about? Because I have to admit, that flew a little bit under my radar, actually.
Yeah, so obviously there are loads of celebrations at the moment for Hybrid Theory turning 20 and that amazing box set that's come out as well. And so they had this live stream on Friday, available over the weekend as well. And there was a Q&A with the band, which was really interesting, followed by footage from their Project Revolution tour from 2002. So it was about an hour Q&A and sort of an hour on the concert stuff. And I love Hybrid Theory. I've talked, you know, I've made no secret about that. I've said so many times, like, how much I've loved it. It was such a huge record for me growing up. It was one of the first records from the heavy world that I really got attached to, and has a huge place in my own personal history as well as music's history. Obviously, it's the biggest selling heavy record of the century, basically. So it was really cool to see them come together and do a Q&A. And they were talking about the early days and what it was like when they got together and when Chester joined. And there's some really nice memories of Chester as well. And Mike just talked about some of the sort of day-to-day stuff. He said about how he and Chester always used to travel together. So whenever they had to go on a plane or, you know, in a car to a hotel or whatever, they'd usually be doing it together. And they used to do a thing where they would make up characters and talk in the characters' voices, but they wouldn't tell each other who the character was. They would just talk to each other and respond to each other. And he said, you know, if they'd be in a car for 2 hours just talking to each other in these made-up voices, just like really annoying everybody behind them. And that was kind of the nice thing about the Q&A, was that they just kind of shared a lot of the smaller moments, but the things that are actually really important in the big picture to what their dynamic was like as a band, and again, who Chester was as a person. Obviously incredibly talented, but also, you know, by all accounts, just a very, very sociable, friendly, fun person to be around as well, and a great band member. So that was super cool. It was a really good Q&A. And then the Project Revolution tour stuff was just cool. It was just like going back in time, really. It's a total time capsule, you know, new metal fashion, big crowd, all the hits from Hybrid Theory. And I really enjoyed watching it. Honestly, so much nostalgia in it. It did make me feel a little bit sad because obviously Chester's no longer with us, but just really kind of grateful to have been around and been at the right point in my life to listen to that record. I was 16, 17 and just being in that place where I felt like it really spoke to me. So it was a really nice celebration.
Amazing. Yeah, just obviously Chester very much missed, as you said. And it's cool to see so many people celebrating that record, because obviously it was a hugely divisive record when it came out in terms of where it sat in the metal scene and everything else. But it just was undeniably the most significant album of its time in terms of taking heavy music to a mainstream stage. I mean, that whole era, we talked about the year 2000 earlier in the year because we did a big thing on Deftones' White Pony, and we kind of used that as a jump off to celebrate the year 2000. You know, when you think about that, I think it's a week, it might literally be a week before Hybrid Theory came out, Limp Bizkit put out Chocolate Starfish, and it became the fastest selling rock album of all time. And then a week later, Hybrid Theory comes out. I mean, it's actually almost unthinkable to think of metal and kind of heavy music shifting those kind of numbers and making that kind of impact on the mainstream. It's such a different time, and I just can't wrap my head around it. I think I said this at the time, but I was looking at some old kind of chart numbers and stuff for a bit of research, and like there were periods in the early 2000s where the top 40 chart would have like 7 or 8 metal songs in it. And even out, so you'd have like everyone from Limp Bizkit to Linkin Park to System of a Down, Deftones, Slipknot, Papa Roach, like all these bands would just be clogging up the charts. And then even outside those ones, you'd have like the PODs and the A's, and like even like your Sum 41s and all those bands that were kind of on the outside of the scene. It was just like, it was a crazy time, and it felt like Hybrid Theory represent the kind of the pinnacle of that moment where rock music was actually the biggest genre in the world.
Yeah, totally. And I hadn't, before all those bands came along, Linkin Park, Papa Roach, Deftones, Korn, I mean obviously they're all from slightly different time periods, but around the early 2000s is when I started actually understanding these bands existed and hearing them for the first time. So it was just huge for me, and Linkin Park were at the forefront of that whole kind of discovery for me, so just massive.
Yeah, incredible. I'm sure we like will have find some excuses to talk about Hybrid Theory more and more. I think
I'll be happy to talk about it more and more. I'd be happy to talk about every single track if you'd like.
Well, maybe if people listening right now would like us to do like maybe a special on Hybrid Theory or something, whether it's just a celebration or kind of a dissection or however we want to do it, let us know on the readers page, and we can definitely do that, because it's an album that certainly Ellen and I helped get us into what we do right now. So I'm very grateful for it. And I'm super grateful that we got to see them perform it in full as well. Because, I don't know. Did you see Linkin Park on the first way round or not?
No, because I would have just been kind of getting into it. I can't remember the first time I saw them, but it wouldn't have been as soon as Hybrid Theory came out or anything like that. And I think I might have even heard it kind of in 2001. I was trying to work out like when we got it in the UK and when I actually would have heard it, and I couldn't quite work it out. But I didn't see them like right then or anything. I was probably just starting to go to gigs and that kind of thing. But that set of Download is my favorite ever Download set. I just loved it so much. And they did Hybrid Theory in full. It was amazing.
Yeah. Me too. 2014 was just, it was just absolutely unbelievable. The most fun half hour I think I've ever witnessed ever anywhere for anything. I didn't actually see Linkin Park the first time around either, but because I was just getting into it myself, I remember my friend was going to see them. I think it was at Wembley, where, I mean, how mad is this? Linkin Park on Hybrid Theory supported Deftones on White Pony. You think that tour and what it represented at the time. But I didn't go because I'm an idiot, and I hadn't really got into Deftones at that point. So, mug. Maybe we'll say that.
I remember coming around, but like I said, I was just getting into gigs and probably didn't have a whole lot of money and all that kind of stuff. So, it's just a bit more difficult, isn't it, when you're younger?
But it is. But we got there in the end, and maybe we'll have more to say about Hybrid Theory soon. Let us know if you'd like us to do that. Lots going on in the metal world this week. I just added another note just now, actually, because I noticed something else has popped up. In bum news, Loathe have had to cancel their upcoming planned show at the Camden Jazz Cafe. They put out a statement, which you can read on their socials right now, saying there's kind of unique circumstances that forced them to pull what would have been a kind of socially distanced, slightly different show. I don't know if that's down to something that the band have going on, or if it's just because obviously the kind of landscape is so uncertain at the moment, because we're seeing COVID numbers rising and we're seeing new rules introduced all the time. So I'm not quite sure what to do with that, but but it does mean that Loathe won't be able to do their show that was going to happen later this month, which sucks. But we do still have lots and lots of stuff going on. There's loads more streams and stuff to get stuck into, which I'm very excited about. Perhaps the biggest of these is Metallica, who have just announced that they're doing a live and acoustic From HQ stream on Saturday, November 14th. The show is kicking off at 2 p.m. Pacific time. I think that's going to be about 10 p.m. UK time, if my maths is right, on a Saturday night. So, that's all right. And Metallica has said this is going to be a special charity event. They've said that this special acoustic show marks our second concert benefiting All Within My Hands, which is their charity organization. And it would include an auction with some awesome items. The best part is that 100% of money raised from this event will go directly to help someone in need. So very, very cool. You can buy a virtual ticket for this. And you can get stuck into the auction and everything else. But there's numerous bundles you can buy as well. And as Metallica said, all the money raised is going to a really cool non-profit organization that goes into giving back to communities around the world. So really, really cool stuff. And if you want more info on that, we've got it on the Metal Hammer website right now. Tell me about another cool stream that's happening, Elle. We've got tons to pick from.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Pussifer stream that's literally just been announced, which looks absolutely amazing. So they're just about to release their album Existential Reckoning. And can you hear me okay, guys? I've just noticed there's an echo.
No, well, you're fine. Carry on.
I'll just keep going then. So yeah, they're doing this amazing show at a place called Arcosanti in Arizona. And I looked it up and it's really super interesting. It's basically an architect from the 70s didn't like the way that cities were laid out and thought that they were too spread out. And so he wasn't into the idea of having like suburbia and kind of low rise housing. He wanted to build high rise housing that was very, very densely packed in a city area so that you could easily get around to people and things. And it was sort of like this interesting kind of idealistic utopian version of a city. So they started building this city in the 70s, but at the moment only 3% of it has been built. So the plans show all these really amazing kind of concrete domes and this densely packed housing where people would basically live in concrete cubes on top of each other. But I think where the gig's going to be is in the amphitheater, which is kind of this concrete, again, like a concrete dome kind of shape with these sort of steps leading from it. And apparently the steps were angled at a certain angle so that you could sit on them and look at the stars. But anyway, you should Google Arcosanti because I just got down this massive internet hole reading about this city and all these ideas about it and the people that were meant to live there. And it's just super, super interesting. So it's going to be a really atmospheric show, I think, from them.
Awesome. I mean, that's one of the kind of silver linings of this, of the shit show that is 2020 in that, you know, we're just seeing bands take up these really unique and interesting opportunities and finding new ways to kind of just get us like stuck into something a bit different, which is really, really cool. Trivium are also doing another stream, the kings of streaming. I think it's probably safe to say at this point, it's their third big stream to happen this year, following the excellent, A Light or a Distant Mirror set a few months ago. And the Deep Cuts one they did more recently. This one is another Deep Cuts stream. It's happening 8 p.m. UK time. Oh, God, where's the date? I'm an idiot and I didn't.
Who are the kings of streaming, though?
They really are.
In terms of actual streams that are just gigs, this will be the third one, right? Because Matt streams obviously all the time on Twitch. But this is the third gig.
It is, yes. And thank you, may I say, Eleanor, for that excellent and very professional time filling while I found the date. but yeah, they're doing it on October 24th. Sorry, I left it on my notes like an idiot. So yeah, 8 p.m. UK time, October 24th, live from Matt Heafy's Twitch channel, which has just, you know, been an unbelievable success over the last few years and has really, you know, been a massive hotspot for metal fans this year in particular. It's all happening right then. It's another Deep Cut set. There's going to be loads of songs they very rarely play on there. You can actually see the full Deep Cuts 2 set list that they're going to be playing on the Metal Hammer website right now, and you can actually vote for the order in which they want to hear the songs, which is quite a nice little touch as well. So yeah, lots of good streaming stuff. Jonathan, tell me about the Orange Goblin celebration.
Yeah, anniversary. Which is like, wow. So they're doing two streamed live shows from the Dome in London, Dufferin Park, on November the 15th and the 16th. There's going to be a few tickets for the actual event itself. So again, probably social distance, but yeah, just like the streams, I know they're going to be amazing, but just being in an audience at an Orange Goblin gig is just such a celebratory experience. And yeah, obviously you can buy tickets to the streams online. And yes, according to Ben Ward, the singer, they're going to celebrate a different era of the band every night. So, I'm really looking forward to either, you know, the earlier, like really, you know, because they're a really big part of the that 90s stoner boom. And so, yeah, the earlier albums, they're kind of a bit more psychedelic. And then they kind of stripped themselves down and just became this just lean metal machine, really. And so just having both those aspects and hearing the early psychedelic stuff again will be absolutely amazing. I can't wait for that. They're like a national institution. They're like our, like a, they're just like our band these days. And and yeah, just it's a shit year for them to be celebrating the 25th anniversary, but I know it's going to be a massive celebration for all of us in either way. And we need that, especially come the end of what's going to be a shitty year and probably a shitty Christmas too.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, it's great to see that bands are still finding ways to do stuff. And Orange Goblin had to cancel their tour they had planned, or at least postpone it. Celebrating 25 years in the game, just one of the greatest metal bands to have ever done it from this country. And we're really, really excited about this. So whatever you're doing, November 15th and 16th, make sure you don't miss those shows. It's going to be big. It's going to be emotional. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be what Orange Goblin do best, which is a big, fat, heavy metal celebration. So yeah, you can go over to Orange Goblin socials or to the Metal Hammer website to find out exactly how you can get stuck in. I think we're doing an interview with Ben on the website as well this week to talk about that, which you can find out. Jonathan put his hand up. Are you doing it?
Yeah. No, there's one other piece of news, which is also...
Hold on. I haven't finished this plug yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, I thought you were going to say that you were doing the Ben Ward interview. I got confused then.
No. Oh, I thought I'd be happy.
Ignore me. Look, anyway, there's a big old Orange Goblin stream happening November 15th and 16th, and we got an interview with Ben Ward from the band coming up imminently on the Metal Hammer website. One of the greatest metal bands ever. Go support them. They rule. We love Orange Goblin. Right, take it away, Jonathan. What else is going on?
Yeah, there's one more piece of news, which is another example of what a shit show 2020 has been. Just this week, one of the greatest extreme metal artists, Timo Kotola, passed away from an illness, I believe. And there's like a small coterie of like unique of like, you know, extreme metal artists who have done, you know, cover art that you instantly recognize their you know, their art style, an amazing grisly sort of chronic, quite gnarly art style. And he'd done record covers for Deathspell Amiga, Dissection, Marduk, Titan Blood, and loads more. And it's just such a great loss for the extreme metal world and for the art world in general. Like his stuff was so there's such intense visions, even though they didn't have a lot of color in them, but the texture of it, of his artwork, and these kind of almost like chalk like drawings, they're just like when you see those images, they will really burn into your brain. And just like that, you know. His artwork has such a unique world to it, and yeah, he's just gone really far too soon, and it's just absolutely gutting. So rest in power, Timo Kotola.
Absolutely agreed on those sentiments. Yeah, it's been a hard year for sure, and there's a lot to think about on that. But you know, as I always say every week, you know, we'll all see each other through with this shit one way or another. And I'm glad we've got these kind of these events happening to kind of keep us ticking through until life returns to some kind of normality again. And speaking of good things that are happening right now, one of these is this week's album of the week, which is this a debut album from Molasses?
Yes, they've had one EP under a slightly different name, but I'll explain that.
Okay, cool. This is the debut full-length album from Molasses. It's called Through the Hollow, out on Season of Mist on Friday. Now, this band feature ex-members of the much-loved and much-missed psychedelic occult band, The Devil's Blood. We used to cover The Devil's Blood a ton in Metal Hammer when they were around. One of the bands that really, I feel like, defined a big part of kind of Subterranea and the kind of underground scene that we were celebrating at the time in Metal Hammer. So if you're into the Devil's Blood at the time, and if you haven't listened to the Devil's Blood before, go back and check them out now. Fantastic band. You're probably gonna have a good idea of what Molasses are all about. I mean, the first single that they released off this album is 11 minutes long, so it's not, you know, this is really kind of involved, as I said, kind of psychedelic occult rock and roll, really good stuff. And I think, you know, Jonathan, you're probably the best place to tell us the background of this album and
this album has a tragic background too, because Salim Lamouchi, he passed away in 2014, and
Salim was obviously part of the Devil's Blood.
He was his brainchild. And Farida, who's a singer for Molasses, was also the singer for Devil's Blood, is his sister. That was kind of really heavy. So, I mean, at that point, the Devil's Blood had pretty much folded, and he was doing a project. They were doing a project together called Salim Lamouchi and His Enemies, which was a bit more avant-garde than the Devil's Blood. And I think even some fans of Devil's Blood found that hard to get into. But once you did, it was a whole kind of new sort of world to get into with elements, but it was just you could hear like the Devil's Blood albums getting a bit more disillusioned as time went on. But when the EP came out, the first EP, Come Reap, I have never seen like a record hit have such an impact immediately. Like, there were talks about people trying to sell them for $1 million. There's something really ecstatic about it, but occultic. It had kind of elements of like late 60s, like Jefferson Starship in it, and but you know, it had their own kind of very unique sound too. It was so identifiable as the Devil's Blood. So in 2014, I guess it would have been April, when Salim Lamouchi and His Enemies were supposed to play at Roadburn, and he passed away not long before that. So that turned into a tribute to Salim Lamouchi. So every single member of the Devil's Blood was on stage. They had this, usually at Roadburn, have like a big backdrop where people project their own films onto it. And so these films of like Salim Lamouchi in slow motion. And I'll tell you what, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but it is generally the most emotional live experience I've ever been through. Like, people who knew him came out just absolute floods of tears. I was in tears by the end of it. There's a little bit of video on YouTube, and I can't even look at that without sort of like completely tearing up. Not just for, you know, in part because of the circumstances, but also just the emotional power of what those musicians and Farida were able to bring. It got announced that Farida was going to do a new band called Molasses. Molasses is the name of a track of Salim Lamouchi and His Enemies album. And they put an EP, and they debuted at Roadburn last year. And I was so looking forward to it. I was thinking, what they're going to come out with. So you can hear lots of elements of Devil's Blood. Live, it was a much proggier version. And I wasn't quite prepared for how proggy it was going to be at the time. And I just felt it was a little bit too much going on for it to completely cohere. So I was really curious to see what's going to happen with the album. And when the album came out, but this is now Molasses with an extra S at the end. The EP came out under normal spelling of Molasses. And I heard this, I was just like, when you say blown away, it's a very kind of slow release, blown away. Like you're just getting slowly blown away over the course of the album. Because you can hear lots of the Devil's Blood in it, but there's something different as well. And the pace is kind of like slow. It's kind of slower. So it just allows something more else to emerge. It's got kind of more jazzy feels to it, like kind of that kind of clavier piano. And I don't know if you notice, but every song is on its own same tempo. The tempo never changes. So it feels like this very kind of like impressionistic journey of like kind of like almost like trundling through this landscape, or it's kind of like jazzy noirish landscape. But then because the tempo stays the same, they slowly kind of like takes on more kind of textures, and so it becomes like really trippy, but in a really slow frog in a pot you don't really notice it kind of way. And so And like, you know, Frida's voice is amazing as ever. It's kind of, it's smoky, it's a really full bodied, it's really expressive. And I love the fact that it just seems to happen, like it seems to occur over a much longer period of time than you normally experience music. It doesn't go for the cheap kind of like sad, happy, you know, release, anything like that. There's no kind of release. It's this constant ongoing thing that becomes kind of slowly more trippy as you go along. And I'm just absolutely in love with this record. And it is really moving, but it doesn't do any of the normal cheap tricks to be moving. It's not kind of emotive in your normal sense, but it's also, yeah, it kind of like plays with your mind, but very subtly as well. So I'm absolutely in love with this record.
Yeah, that's more succinctly put and wonderfully expressed than I could hope to get into, really. Certainly an album that demands a lot of attention. You know, like I said, the kind of single they released was 11 minutes long. So
yeah, it's got this killer line in it as well. This really important line. Which is the devil, I think it's hard to make out, but the devil's blood is left with me.
Wow.
And it's in a song called The Devil's Lips, and that's the final track on the album. And so, yeah, so it's obviously trying to like process something, obviously, you know, because, you know, your brother passed away. And it does it on its own unique time frame. And it feels like something kind of like I said, everything happens over such a stretch. You don't really notice it until like, hold on a sec, but it's got a slightly mystical feel to it as well. And it's just, yeah, that voice is just, it's got so much kind of experience in it that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to keep playing for your heartstrings. It's just in there. And it just comes out over the course of the record. And yeah, just really special piece of art.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful stuff. That is Molasses Through the Hollow, out this Friday via Season of Mist. And yeah, whether you're familiar with The Devil's Blood and their story or not, I highly recommend you check this album out. It's a real unique and moving piece of work in a year full of great albums. And on that note as well, we forgot to mention the Venom Prison album that came out last week when we were kind of rounding up what's out there. So maybe if you want something that's just a little bit of a palate cleanser after that Molasses album, don't forget to go and blare the ever-loving shit out of that Venom Prison album that came out last week. It is an absolute monster. Re-recorded old tracks and a couple of new ones as well. It all sounds absolutely ferocious. It's called Primeval, and that's out now.
I would say that the Molasses album is a soul cleanser.
Yeah, very, very fairly put. Very fairly put. Right, let's take some questions from the Facebook page where our readers hang out, shall we? It's facebook.com/Melthammer Readers if you want to join us. Do you want to do this first one, El?
Sure. Ben Wilmer asks, have you had to do your end of year best of 2020 lists already? If so, what's as yet unreleased, but we should keep both eyes on?
I mean, this is a very savvy and knowing, it feels like a knowing question from Ben, because we literally, I'm not exaggerating, finished off our albums of the year's list that's coming up in a couple of months today. So we've just got it all in. Obviously, we're not revealing any spoilers. Jonathan did a sterling job tying it all together as always. But what's that? What's kind of not out there yet that people should be ready for? Because I think maybe some people know that if you're a band and you've got an album out in kind of October, November, December, you sometimes slip between the cracks a bit when it comes to these lists because people haven't had a chance to listen to them yet.
You go ahead
because you're a reviews editor, Jonathan.
Yeah, so there's a few actually. I'll kind of do them in in sort of chronological order. So there's a couple of things we reviewed this issue that I would, there were, I mean, some of them got votes. Well, one of them got votes, but it might have got higher, but I guess they were kind of an acquired taste, which is Nibiru, which is an Italian band that we've covered in the magazine before. Just the most tripped out psychedelic sludge band you've ever heard. I think I described them as like having your brain put through like a celestial combine harvester. And they kind of sort of came out of nowhere. And yeah, me and Dom, we heard the first few albums, and we were just like, Dom Lawson, that is, and we were just like, holy fuck, what is this? Just like you're just looking over the precipice, and you're just seeing the great swirling mass of the void in front of you. And so it's an Italian three piece. They sing in Enochian, which is the language of angels, according to the Elizabethan physicist Sir John Dee. When he believed him and his cohorts could speak to angels through mirrors called a scrying mirror. So there's a bit of background. And again, this is music that just pulls your brain apart over time. But even by their standards, you know, most bands they get more easy to listen to. This band is just going further out, and so they have an album out coming, which just test yourself against that. There's a great band called Calandro who've got an album out. Norwegian band, sort of partly in the pop noir, but they kind of came off from that kind of Norwegian pagan folk scene. They did a cover of Vardruna's Hellvegan, which is their signature song, which is a very brave thing to do, but my God, it's incredible. And the singer Katrina's voice is just one of the most, in a very scantic, but one of the most sublime voices you've heard. And so this is the first, and they've been around for nearly 10 years, the debut album, and it feels just like it's been percolating and being distilled over the course of like eons, basically. It's beautiful and just next level talent, total class. There's a black metal record that's coming out in December, I just heard yesterday, called Imhar Tarakat, coming out on Prophecy Productions or their subsidiary Lupus Lounge.
You're gonna have to spell that one.
Yeah, Imha, then Tarikat, and it's, as far as like straightforward, like non-psychedelic black metal, although it becomes a bit psychedelic, it's by far the best black metal record I've heard all year. One of the best black metal records I've heard for ages, just absolutely relentless and raging. Just when something has genuine power, you can really tell this kind of stuff. And this really has it. There's one song that sounds like a bit like Killing Joke gone black metal. And it's up there with your Sfati Dowdies and it's absolute top tier black metal. And it's just amazing. And the other one that I'm looking forward to coming out is Opium Warlords, which is Albert Witchfinder. He used to be in the famed doom band Reverend Bizarre. He's had a lot of personal issues to deal with, but this album's, but all his albums are like, you know, they're kind of classic doom mixed in with weirdest idiosyncrasies. This is more on the classic doom side, and it's great to have Albert Witchfinder back because he's a legend in our scene.
Wow, awesome. That is a hell of a list right there for people to jot down and look forward to. What about you, Al? Is there anything still yet to technically come out that you want to put on people's radars?
Yeah, I was going to say the Ghost Main album that we talked about earlier, Anti-Icon, that's out in a couple of weeks. Killer Be Killed have a new record coming out, which is really cool. And there's a record that's literally just come out, a band called Sordid Pink, and the record's self-titled, so that's called Sordid Pink. And I've just got super, super obsessed with it. They used to be Destiny Potato, a tech metal band, and it's kind of, they've dialed back the tech metal and sort of dialed up the catchiness. And it's hard to describe. It goes through loads of different styles. Like, what was I describing it to you as the other day? I even said the word Paramore, but don't let that put you off if you hate Paramore. It's just really fun, interesting, cool record with loads of different kind of styles on it, but sounds really modern.
Yeah, I remember that, Destiny Potato, they played the Tech Fest a few years
ago. Yeah, yeah. They're a really cool band as well.
Are they Russian or something?
Not obviously the same people, but...
Well, are they Russian?
Not that I'm aware.
I have a feeling they were, like, from that part of the world.
I can't remember. So now I'm going to have to Google it.
it's a cool shout though. And yeah, when Elle said that they were, I wasn't a big Destiny Potato fan, to be honest. I'm not big on that kind of stuff. And Elle kind of stressed that they don't really sound like that. And I listened to them, and yeah, Sorted Pink are pretty cool. They are definitely different to what Destiny Potato were doing.
The internet says Serbia.
Serbia. Okay, it's not far off.
There you go. And yeah, absolutely backed the Killer Be Kill record as well. That is really, really, really good. Don't quite want to say surprisingly good because it's got some of the greatest minds in heavy music behind it, but it is like really, 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 really good. And yeah, the Paul Bearer album, which comes out in a couple of weeks, we will go in deep on that. I'm sure. I think we'll probably make that the album of the week for that week. Doom Metal Magnificence, that's on the way. So yeah, still lots of great stuff still to come this year. It's been an just eruption of amazing music this year. As you will all find out when you read our albums of the year list in December, it's going to be a biggie. Ian Blano Roberts asked, "Would you like some toast?" I wouldn't mind a bit of toast. What do you have on toast? What's your favorite topping?
Well, I was just going to say, I read this question just before we did this podcast, and I thought, yeah, I would like some toast. So I made some toast, and then I put cheese in the middle and made it into a cheese toastie. So I probably should have done it under the grill, but I didn't have enough time. So yeah, it made me want it.
There you go. Ian Blano Roberts affecting real world change.
That's the classic toast.
What is?
Peanut butter and honey.
Interesting. I've never had that.
That sounds horrible, Jonathan.
It's absolutely incredible.
Sounds
There's a lot of things you can put in peanut butter that works really well. My brother taught me the glories of peanut butter and garlic, believe it or not.
That sounds horrible too. Why are you just
Strange.
saying horrible things?
Peanut butter and honey is amazing. It's you don't know what you're missing.
Really like peanut butter. I just make myself eat it sometimes because it's healthy.
Fair enough. John Haylock asks, with the Aussie tour pushed back to 2022, do you think it's ever likely to happen? John says, I hope so, but I'm not optimistic. And then he asks, have you ever held a ticket for 4 years or more for a show? That is a long time, isn't it?
It's a
Four
really
years in the
long time.
making. Do we think the Aussie tour will finally happen?
Who knows? There's literally no way of knowing. I mean, you hope so, don't you? But we don't even know what's happening like tomorrow.
Yeah, this is it. This is it. You just don't know. I mean, as well as the kind of epidemic shenanigans, obviously Aussie's been slightly worse for wear health over the last couple of years. But the thing is, he seems absolutely hell-bent on just touring whenever possible. So if he's doing it and he's up for it and everything's back to where it should be, which I definitely hope it will be by then. Why not? I'd definitely like to see Ozzy at least one more time, especially I mean, we've got Judas Priest on the front cover of this issue, and their last album is one of my favorite things they've done. And ridiculously, I've still not actually seen them on it because this tour keeps getting pushed back. So I've not actually seen them perform all those awesome newer songs yet. So I would very much like to see that happen. Do you want to take the next question, Seltz?
Yeah. Well, actually, we're gonna. Has anyone ever had a ticket for 4 more years?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, good point. I can't say I have. No, I think the tickets I've got for next year are probably the longest I've had tickets because some of them were from this year. So that'll be kind of at least 18 months in the making for me.
Actually, you know what? There's actually a ticket that I'll probably have I've held for 4 years. Like, if you're talking about ones that you kept or ones that you're waiting to happen, and for me, it's Bombers, which is Abath and Tora from they used to be in Old Funeral together, their band Bombers, which is a Motorhead tribute band. And I've seen him live once in Bergen, and like it's so uncanny how much he sound he could like how much Abath sounds like Lemmy when he wants to. And the band are killer, and they were supposed to play the Black Heart 2 years ago. It was cancelled because of the drone over the airport. Is it Heathrow?
Wow, that was ages ago.
Yeah, so they were supposed to fly over on the one day of that stupid fucking drone because that cancelled that tour. Then they're supposed to play last year, but Abath was in rehab, and it was put back to this year. So, but I bought tickets for it, and so yeah, I might end up who knows, I might end up having that for 4 years before it actually happens.
Wow.
I used to keep it. There's one ticket I kept for years, which was I was a huge Pixies and Throne Muses fan. So I always see him every time they played when the first albums came out in like late 80s. And when I heard they're playing The Form, which is called the Town and Country Club, I went straight there and I had ticket number 0001. So I kept that. And then one day my wallet got stolen. I didn't really care what else was in it, apart from the fact that it had my ticket in it. That was heartbreaking.
Oh, that sucks that it got stolen.
Yeah. But throwing Muse and Pixies at the Forum, it was just, oh my God, it was amazing.
That's pretty big. Pixies are supporting Pearl Jam at that rearranged Hyde Park gig next year, aren't they? I mean, that is, whoever's booking that knows their audience.
I have a ticket for that show.
I saw them around the time of like Come on Pilgrim and Surfer Rosa, but I was actually more obsessed with Throne Muses at the time, which is an incredible band, and their first debut album called Throne Muses, which sadly isn't on Spotify or Apple Music, is one of the literally like psychologically scarring albums I've ever heard. They became a lot more easygoing after that, but it's one of the most intense records I've ever heard.
Wow!
Right.
All right, go on then, Sells. Take the next question.
Yeah. Dan Welch is asking, so it says, many bands have used this enforced break to release new material, either albums or singles, or at least do live streams. Which, if any band, do you like to hear from before we return to normal? Personally, he'd love to hear something from Limp Bizkit.
That'd be pretty cool. And a right,
You know how I switched to second person?
I know this.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the words, no. I'd love to hear something from Limp Bizkit.
I think
people would have worked it out, Jonathan.
I'd also like to hear something from Limp Bizkit. When are we getting the elephant record?
Yeah, perhaps.
Oh, God knows.
That's elephants.
That elephant record has been...
elephants, that's it.
I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, that elephant record has been in development hell since I've been at Metal Hammer.
Yeah, it has.
Fucking hell. Crazy. I was thinking about this and I was thinking, well, one of the annoying things about listening to amazing new bands from out amazing new albums is that, you know, you're not going to get to see them perform live anytime soon. And also there's some bands that you kind of want them all to be able to get in a studio together and play together and do it properly for it to work. So I was kind of thinking like, well, who can actually just probably make an album as good as it possibly can be anyway, even in the current climate? It's probably someone that doesn't have to rely on other musicians so much and blah, 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 blah. So I thought Carpenter Brute. I would love to hear a new Carpenter Brute album. It's been a couple of years since Leather Teeth. I've got to say the Dan Terminus album that recently came out, if you like synthwave, is really good. It just crept into my top 20 right at the last minute, which I'll reveal more of on a later date. But yeah, I'm still loving my synthwave and I feel like Carpenter Brute has all the kind of stuff he needs to produce a great album. So I'd love to hear that. And on a kind of similar note, although maybe I'd want to wait until they can actually tour it, I'm pretty sure Liam Howlett is making new Prodigy music and I would love to hear that again at some point, as much of an emotional thing as it would be after Keith dying. I think that would be a pretty amazing thing to have to kind of just get released into the world from nothing. So those are my votes. What are yours, Elle?
I would like to hear some new music from Rammstein because they've posted a photo from the studio and I would very much enjoy that if they were to release something, but I'm not holding my breath because it was a decade between the last release and the one before. So we'll see. And in terms of streams, I'd like to see Mirka in a forest because I really like the folk science record from this year and it'd be cool to just like see her doing that out in the wild somewhere.
That would be very cool. I would like to see that. Any albums you'd like to see kind of, or new music from any band you'd like to kind of see at the first available opportunity, Celts?
I'm going to stick to live streams really, because I have a few bit of inside information on some really interesting stuff coming up next year that I can't really talk about because it hasn't been announced yet, but there's some very interesting stuff coming out next year that I'm really excited about. But and a very collaboration event. So for live streams, I like to either see something that can really get a sense of intimacy. Maybe you can do with a live stream. So Oceans of Slumber would be amazing. I'd love to see Solstafir do something outdoors in Iceland. And because I love this record, and it didn't make my top 20, but I just absolutely love it anyway, is the Night Flight Orchestra do something with loads of neon and 80s stuff everywhere. Because yeah, it's by far my favorite Night Flight Orchestra record. Kind of Björn Spetz from Soilwork doing like AOR. You know how much me I love Heat. It's in that kind of vein, maybe not different kind of cheesy, but just you can tell, just tell the guy is in his happy place when he's making this new record. He was in his happy place when he's making this new record. Yeah, so that would be amazing to see as well too.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't do a stream, did I? Those are all fantastic choices. I would like to see a stream from Backwash because I feel like if she could create a kind of visual event that could match the tone and the themes of just the crazy journey of that album from this year, I think that would be brilliant. Mark Baker says, a recent question provoked a thought in me. With so many genres and bands available at the touch of a smartphone, have you considered running a series of articles titled Metal Hammer's Guide 2, where the history of a genre or scene is given alongside some important albums in that area? For instance, I know Stephen Hill has previously written a piece on the Boston hardcore scene, and a recent question asked for black metal starter album suggestions. This is something we've talked about, isn't it, Al?
We've talked about it so many times. We started doing a series, but it's kind of faded out. But every now and then we do bring back a feature that's a guide to a genre. So if you go onto the website, you can read that piece by Steve on Boston Hardcore. You can also read Dom Lawson's Guide to the Gothenburg Scene. That's listed under the heading Unchained Melody, Revisiting the Influential Gothenburg Sound. And you can also read Chris Chandler's Story of Thrash Metal from 1985 to 1989.
Yeah, I really like the idea of like doing these kind of micro scenes rather than just like talking about a genre or subgenre in general. Talk about particular moments, like catalytic moments in time, or political areas, or particular sort of like scenes, like smaller scenes. Like we did a piece in the magazine a while back on the New York scene in the early 90s, where you had either these really groove heavy bands like Unsane and Prong. And then you had two bands I always thought were psychologically really and sonically really bound in the early 90s, which was early Typo Negative, like Slow, Deep and Hard, and Life of Agony, Circa River Runs Red. And yeah, you've just the more you narrow down what you talk about, the more interesting, the more you get to light on a particular way of thinking that those bands had. And it kind of brings into sharper relief. So I like the idea of like really, yeah, of micro scenes, of like scenes within scenes. And if you narrow it down, you get really interesting stories, and how, you know, ideas kind of spread amongst bands and what their ideals were and their psychologies and everything at that time. So I love doing those.
You can read that piece by Ken McIntyre on loudersound.com as well, the Metal Hammer website. And it's called The Rise and Fall of New York's 90s Metal Scene.
Yeah, because it was, yeah, it was a particular time, and it was a particular time in a particular place, and I love those kind of stories.
Yeah, and we will definitely do more of those down the line as well. You know, there's a the pandemic kind of kind of slightly changed up how we had to kind of organize a commission and in a lot of cases write features, but we will definitely get back on that kind of stuff very soon. Excellent suggestion, Mark Baker. Should we do one more question now? Let's do
Sure, why not? This is from Steve Roland Ratliner Douglas, and he asks Stephen, sorry, not Steve, Stephen Roland Ratliner Douglas,
yeah, get that part right. Don't make him look silly.
and he asks, what's your favorite live stream so far, and which one are you looking forward to next?
For me, I mean, it's the whole, it wasn't like a live stream, but the kind of download event I enjoyed a lot, you know, as a part of the whole kind of streaming culture. In terms of actual live streams, for me, it's by far and away Trivium. I thought A Light or a Distant Mirror was amazing, and it really felt the closest to actually being at a gig that I've really felt, especially knowing so many other people were watching it at the same time as me, and I was kind of, we were texting each other and just really enjoying it. I love that. But also a big shout out to Code Orange as well, who kind of did that awesome stream of their own near the start of lockdown. They kind of really came out of the blocks fast with all that. So those would be my two immediate choices, although there have been a lot of good ones.
I agree with your choices. I also really love the Catatonia one, just because you got to hear new material from City Burials and it felt really personal. It was just kind of them in like a studio space and it was really nicely filmed. And that's something they're releasing as well.
I think my favorite from like a, just a pure from a spectacle as much, just yeah, it was everything really. It was Amon Ra during the European Metal Festival Alliance. Like they really thought about what they'd done, the way they were kind of all in a circle around a fire with all these like beacons converging, and it was absolutely magical. So that's probably one of that's my favorite. The other ones I really enjoyed obviously were Antipazuzu, one of the early ones. Oh, they just played the whole album in full, but they really thought about how they presented it. I mean, they're not showmen in any way, but they had a different treatment for each song, and it was just incredible. And the Enslaved shows were amazing as well. I mean, the last one of that kind of tour they did of the three, where they played the new songs from Utgard, and again they thought about how they presented it. Again, another band in a circle facing inwards. But the sound was incredible. The production was re was it kind of told a story as well too. It was a bit short, but yeah, it's just a band completely on top of the game and so incredibly tight. And it just sounded absolutely pristine.
Yeah, fantastic choices. And I've got to say, I really am excited about some of these other streams that are coming up. Another Trivium stream, the Pucifer stream, the Metallica stream looks great, and the Orange Goblin stream celebrating the 25th anniversary is going to be great as well. So there's plenty of stuff to look forward to, plenty of stuff to get excited about, not least of all the latest issue of Metal Hammer, which is out right now, featuring the one and only Judas Priest on the cover. We always appreciate your support in these crazy old times. So thank you very much for hanging with us and supporting us during this year. And we will, as always, be back next week. And let us know, as I said, if you'd like us to do something special for Hybrid Theory or any other album that's coming up and has an anniversary on the way. We are always open to ideas. So let us know, and we will see you next week. So in the meantime, stay safe, stay metal. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.